North Idaho News of the Week is brought to you in part by Evergreen Realty, commercial and residential property listings. Online at evergreen-realty.com. Good morning. It is Friday, August 2nd, and you've tuned into North Idaho News of the Week here on 88.5 KRFY. This is Panhandle Community Radio. My name is Jack Peterson, and I'm here back in the studio with Will Love. Good morning, Will. Good morning.
Glad to have you back, Jack.
Oh, it's nice to be here. Thanks. It is great to be back in North Idaho where it is, although warm, not quite so humid.
Right.
That's appreciated.
It's a dry heat.
It is. That means something, actually. They say that, but it's true. And we are also pleased to have Zach Hagedon in the studio. He's the editor-in-chief of the Sandpoint Reader. Good morning, Zach.
Good morning. Welcome back, Jack.
Why, thank you. We'll do our traditional rundown of the top stories of the week here. The expected top story was to be the competency hearing in the hearing in the arson case, which had been set for July 31st, but that hearing was vacated, and there is a competency hearing now set for August 21st for the suspect of the arson in the Army Navy store fire of the night of July 4th, out in West Bonner County. Applicants are sought for the West Bonner County School Board trustee position after Troy Reinbold's resignation, which, Will, you and Chris talked about on last week's program. But the board intends to post an application for the Zone 3 trustee on Monday, and then the application window will run for 2 weeks and close on August 19th, set into motion by the July 17th resignation of former trustee Troy Reinbold. The big story in the Sandpoint Reader, written by Mr. Hagedon, which we will get back to, is the wastewater treatment plant. A tour was given to state and federal officials. Improvements required for the wastewater treatment plant that treats all the sewage and, well, wastewater for the city of Sandpoint are estimated to run up to $100 million, and funding is sought for that looming project. Coming up, starting on Monday and running through the month of August, the Army Corps of Engineers will be treating flowering rush in Lake Ponderay with herbicide in, I think, was it
six locations.
Six locations, thank you. And, that's the big headlines that I have, and then a few smaller things to kind of revisit and preview. Did I miss anything, anything major? Anybody?
Oh, week two of the festival.
Well, sure. Yes. It does sound like it's going pretty well. I think if you live in Sandpoint, can you pretty much hear the festival?
Oh, I can hear it from my house.
I can hear it from my house, and I'm outside city limits, so it's, yeah, it's cool. Will, I think you're probably just outside the blast zone.
Yeah. I don't necessarily get that, but we went to the Violent Femmes concert last Friday, and had a lot of fun at that. So,
well, excellent. We'll talk off the air about that. I'd like to hear how that concert went. The wastewater treatment plant. This is a big story and has been on and off a topic of city interest for, I think, at least 10 years. It's been a known problem and been something that various administrations and officials have tried to bring attention to, but it looks like things are getting a little more serious now at the wastewater treatment plant. As I mentioned, Mayor Jeremy Grimm invited officials from, we had the offices of Idaho Governor Brad Little, U.S. Representative Russ Fulcher, U.S. Senator Jim Risch, the Idaho Department of Environmental Quality and Keller & Associates, the firm contracted to produce the preliminary engineering report on the project, which is expected to be finalized next Wednesday at the city council meeting. A tour of federal and state dignitaries arrived to take a look at what's going on just south of Lakeview Park. And you were also invited, Zach.
Right.
And
yeah.
Sansari, right?
Yep. Sansari Mitchell, our intrepid staff reporter, joined me on the tour. And it's actually just north, or no, it is just south of Lakeview Park. So usually when you give a tour of something, right, like you're trying to show off what's what's cool about a thing. In this case, the tour was essentially meant to show what's wrong with the place. And it was pretty dramatic, to say the least. I mean, like most people, I don't think a lot about the wastewater treatment plant. I mean, when I go to the festival and I smell it, I think about it, right? But I think that's sort of the nature of the beast, right? I mean, Will and I were talking before we went on the air. It's like, literally, you flush this stuff away and you don't want to think about it. That's the whole that's the whole vibe of the wastewater treatment plant. However, as you mentioned, Jack, it has been a looming issue for a very long time.
Yeah.
And I don't know why it doesn't get as much attention as it should. It's probably because of that function of us just not wanting to think about it. But multiple mayoral administrations have talked about it. I know that when our current mayor, Jeremy Grimm, ran for office, he made this his central issue, and he maintains that today. He says this is his number one priority. If he achieves nothing during his time in office, if he does this, then he'll consider that to be a win. City Council President Deb Rule has made this a big issue for her campaigns and in just her talking points generally. I think this is top of mind for her. Former City Council President Kate McAllister, when she ran for mayor against Jeremy Grimm, made this a big issue for her campaign. So there is a lot of attention being paid to it within City Hall, but I don't know that it necessarily makes it out into the public too often. And that was a good opportunity for us to do this week because of the tour. And I guess I was really struck by, number one, the dollar figure associated, $100 million, upwards, you know, of $100 million, which would be the biggest project in Bonner County since the byway.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of what I was thinking, that I can't, nothing else springs to mind anywhere even close to that.
And
that
so,
kind of figure.
And wrangling that amount of money is going to require state, federal, and local money. And I think the goal from the mayor's office anyway is to get at least half of this paid for with grants. Because if we have to go the loan route, I mean, we're going to do this no matter what. So people should be prepared for that. Like, this is going to happen no matter what, because it has to happen. And if it comes down to the fact that we can't get any state or federal money, grant money, then it's going to be 100% on ratepayers. And if that happens, we're going to be paying very high utility rates. So we should all be crossing our fingers and, you know, our toes and doing whatever we can to pray that the state and the federal governments decide to help us out with this. Now, one of the problems that we have for getting this money is that we've been doing too good of a job with what little we have. And that was brought up in the piece. And I'll talk more specifically, I guess, if you want to hear more details, gory details about what's wrong with the plant. But the fact of the matter is we're working with a very substandard facility that, despite its many, many failings and flaws, the people who have been running it, and there's only about five of them, and they're going out to hire a sixth soon, but really five people have been maintaining this thing with duct tape, baling twine, Gorilla tape, ratchet straps, you know, whatever they can find, to a degree that we haven't really had a lot of violations. And when the DEQ goes to look at how to fund certain of these projects, they look at like what obviously needs to be fixed.
Yeah.
And one of the rubrics they use is like, well, I mean, is this plant failing? Like, do we have evidence that it's pushing E. coli into the river or lake or whatever? Is it polluting the place with chlorine? Well, our people do such a good job that even though the thing is like basically a 1955, you know, beaten up truck that only one person can drive, they've still managed to maintain it to a level that it doesn't look bad on paper. So when DEQ looks at our plant just in Boise, you know, they're like, well, that looks like a great plant, but it's not.
Yeah.
So we are kind of facing that. And I think that was sort of the point of the tour was to say, like, okay, look, I mean, governor's office, you know, congressional delegation, our plant looks good on paper in your offices, but in reality on the ground, it's a, as the mayor said, a time bomb.
Yeah.
And that is a direct quote.
I think you mentioned there a couple times, or at least once, that it was, you know, very close to outright catastrophe. Can you speak to that a little bit at times in the past that it's, that things have almost gone bad and then been recovered?
So not too long ago, we had a combination of factors that resulted in a near disaster. There's a couple of issues with the plant itself, is that we don't have really a great way to regulate the flow of the water.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things they want to fix, is get an equalization pond, is what they call it. It's a way that you can regulate how much water is moving through the plant at any given time.
Hmm.
And that's important because we have a lot of weird weather instances in this area where we have rain on snow. We get like huge downpours. And when the weather itself falls on the wastewater treatment plant, that becomes, you know, water in the system. So we had an instance where rain on snow occurred where, you know, soil wasn't permeable enough because it's clay and sand and, you know, it's Sand Point.
Mm-hmm.
It basically almost burst its banks.
Hmm.
And the way it was described during the tour was we were inches away from the plant basically spilling out into the Ponderay River, which would have been, as I think Supervisor Devin Hull, who I think deserves the key to the city, where he says, like, if that had happened, I would have moved to Florida.
Yeah.
Like, it would have been national news. It would have been just an absolute disaster.
Yeah.
It's like, and I didn't get this figure in here, and I don't know why I didn't. I'm regretting it now, but it's 250,000 gallons would have gone in of, you know, of basically untreated wastewater sewage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it would have been a black smear in the river going all the way from Lakeview Park to Priest River and beyond.
Yeah. And this happened when?
Like, they didn't say exactly when. I know it was
recently.
It was fairly. Yeah. I don't think they wanted to necessarily say when it happened.
Right, I suppose. Yeah.
Yeah.
But this.
It's in the near past.
Yes, and this is the kind of thing that. Just kind of got lucky that the weather changed in time for.
Luck plays a big part in this, and if you talk to the mayor, he will say that
mm-hmm.
that we've been extremely lucky, but we've also been very fortunate to have the people running that plant that we have, because they MacGyver that thing on a daily basis, probably hourly basis in many cases.
Probably worth mentioning for those who aren't aware, Jeremy Grimm's history with the before he was mayor, which he was just elected last November, he did at one point have a role in the city, so he's probably seen this up close and personal. Going back,
he was city planner for 8 years.
Yeah, and that's in the mid 2010s, I think, something like that. 2000s,
yeah, it was like 2000. I forget exactly the dates.
Right, but
it was 2005-ish, 2004, or something like that.
Yeah, but long history in the city, and would have seen this this kind of looming crisis.
He's very familiar with it. Yeah,
yep. The price tag. I mean, it is huge. What is the what would be the plan to fix this, to fix the wastewater treatment plant? I guess, you know, why not start new with just a brand new plant somewhere else? Or the plan is, as I understand, just to fix the existing plant.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
So in 2017, thereabouts, the city determined that the plant had outlived its useful life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, components of this thing go back to the 40s.
the 1940s.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
So the plant was built in 1955, and a lot of the components that we used at that time came from the Farragut Naval Station. And as it was described to me, they were old when they were new.
Okay.
This was like Navy surplus that we built this plant with. Uh-huh. And we've sort of hodgepodged it over the years and added things here and there as they've broken. And it seems to me, anyway, that a lot of the equipment that we're using is from, you know, sort of the 50s, 60s, but also from the early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the pieces and parts that we were shown came from, you know, 1984. Mm. We had some stuff that got brought in like 2016, thereabouts, but really there hasn't been a whole lot done there since. So 2017, they decided that the thing was dead, and it was basically just on hospice care. Mm-hmm. And they just started to develop a 20-year facilities plan in 2017, 2018.
Mm-hmm.
And they decided, the city council, that is, decided in 2018 to go with an option where they kept the plant where it is, and then we're going to do bridge improvements, you know, quote unquote, which is they would sort of like keep it sort of moving and fix what they could when they could. And they didn't really have a hard deadline for when they were going to have a complete rebuild, but they realized that they needed to replace basically the entire thing.
Hmm.
That fell away. I mean, we didn't talk about it hardly at all from that time on. And I'm sure that, you know, COVID played a part in that, but who knows? Regardless, there was a option to relocate it to a property on Baldy, like Baldy, so the Baldy property is what they call it. It's just sort of west of where, I guess, Farman School is. Big chunk of land over there.
Mm-hmm.
City bought it for about $1 million using water utility rate money.
Mm-hmm.
By deciding not to move it there, we still have to make the ratepayers whole on it. So there's a lot of different ideas about what to use that property for to repay the rate, like mm-hmm. the fund that mm-hmm. we used. The reason they decided not to move it there was because, I mean, A, it's the cost of building an entire new plant in an entirely new place. I mean, you have to build all the subsurface infrastructure, the whole thing. But we also would have had to pump the wastewater from the current plant to that plant.
Mm.
That would have been kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
I think was the thinking. So it seemed smarter just to work with what we have and then make that place better. It would have been cheaper in the long run. So how you do that is another question. So I talked with the mayor on Tuesday at City Hall, and I asked him that. I was like, well, what does this even look like? Like, you can't shut this thing off. I mean, that's one of the problems with the plant is that there's no redundancy.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot shut this plant down.
Mm.
It has to run 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. And if you shut it down, then you can imagine what happens. Like mm-hmm. every toilet in town, every shower, every sink backs up.
Mm.
So this is the red line. You know, it's always running at red line is what the mayor said, because we cannot shut it down. So as you're replacing components, you have to keep the current ones running.
Mm-hmm.
And the mayor describes it as flying an airplane while you're changing its wings.
Mm.
So there are two ways we could go about it. We could phase it where we build replacements for things while they're operating and then shut them down in a phased way, or we build an entire new plant while the plant is running and then just sort of transition it and shut it down just as the other one's coming online.
Mm-hmm.
There are pros and cons to both of those options. I mean, there's a lot of risk involved with both.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess it remains to be seen how we're going to do it, and it depends on how much money we get. If the ratepayers are having to shoulder this 100%, that's going to determine how we phase it. Because $100 million all at once,
yeah,
versus $100 million over a period of time. I mean, I think the preference from City Hall is to do this in a way that we're done with it in 3.5 years.
Hmm. Okay. It was declared, I can't remember the word you used, but basically in 2017 was when it was declared to be insufficient,
right,
pretty much. So that's 7 years ago. Mm-hmm. So we'd be about 10 and a half years past that point by the time it's replaced and all said and done, if that 3.5 year outlook is correct.
And really, it should have been done 20 years ago, is what everyone says.
Right, yeah. So I guess you can speak to that a little bit, too. It's a plant that was built in the 1950s for the population, I suppose, at that time. And mm-hmm. Let's hope they had some foresight and said, the population's going to grow. But it was not built for the population that we have now.
It was Frankensteined,
yeah,
over that time.
Mm-hmm.
And when you take a tour, and I strongly suggest that everybody in town call City Hall and arrange for a tour of this facility, because you will be amazed to see what they've been doing.
I was going to say that.
After lunch.
In your experience as a reporter, you're used to hyperbole from politicians,
right,
and you got to actually see this, and it's a mess.
It's a mess. Well, yeah. So some examples, when you walk through the plant, you'll see technology that clearly came from, the Cold War. If you look, pick up the paper, you'll see an image that Sansore Mitchell took of, you know, a control panel that looks like it came out of, you know.
Yeah, it looks like a prop from Lost.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, well, there's presses in there, like solid waste presses that look, they're from the early 80s. And that if they break, and one of them is broke right now, so we're only operating on one press because you can't get parts for it anymore. There's on one of these, on the press that is working, you can kind of see it in the image, but not very well, but there's a wrench, like they had took a wrench and just like clamped it on there to hold some parts together. They have to use a sledgehammer as like a control lever. Mm-hmm. You walk through one of the pump areas and they had a compressor go down at one point, which clearly is very important for a pump. But they didn't have time to waste, you know, going through the whole procurement process at City Hall. So they just went to Home Depot and bought one and it's mm-hmm. in there, and they kept the price tag sticker on it so that they remember what model it was uh-huh. in case that one breaks and they have to go back and get another one. Uh-huh. There was one time where a pump went out, and of course, like, as I mentioned, they're like, they can't shut it down.
Yeah.
So they needed an emergency way to get, you know, wastewater from one building to another, and the pump was out. So what they did is they had to get a hose and run it from one building to the other. But the only hose they could find was a 4-inch like RV hose. So mm-hmm. the kind of hose you would use to pump your RV toilet.
Yeah.
And ran that from one building to another. But it was during the winter, so it froze. And then you've got a frozen pipe they have to deal with. And it was just, I mean, it's one thing after the other.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what you'll hear from people like Devin Hull, the supervisor, is that, you know, every day it's just something breaks and you got to fix it. And there's just no way around it. And his past 5 years have been nothing but fixing things
mm-hmm.
and just maintaining the basics of the functioning of the plant.
Now, on this tour, there were state and federal mm-hmm. Officials. What was kind of their response?
I think that they were a little shocked, was kind of the impression I got. You know, they didn't. I mean, the governor's office, the representative from the governor's office definitely, I think, went away thinking this is a huge problem. I mean, when he saw the sledgehammer laying on the ground and mm-hmm. said something to Devin Hull, he's like, well, I see you have some percussive maintenance going on in here. That's kind of a joke. And Devin was like, well, no, I mean, we're using it as a control lever. So it's worse than that. I mean, it's not, I mean, he was like, yeah, it's kind of funny, but not really.
Yeah.
I think that the Senator Risch representative, he seemed very taken aback, I think, and interested in what was going on. Senator Fulcher's representative didn't say anything during the entire tour, so I didn't really get a read on him. But
I mean, ultimately, this is not just a Sandpoint problem, because we've got communities downriver
right.
that, if there is an issue, are going to be affected by this.
I think that folks in Dover and Priest River should probably be more aware of this than they are. I mean, even people in Sandpoint aren't really aware of this, but those communities definitely should be concerned about what's going on here. And if they have folks that want to reach out to the governor's office and the congressional delegation, they probably should.
Mm-hmm.
I think the city councils in those communities probably ought to be aware, and their mayors. And I'm almost positive that Mayor Eskridge in Dover is very aware of this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, our state delegation probably ought to be involved in this too. So I mean, hyperbole is not really in my wheelhouse, as you're mentioning, Will, but this, I think, it really does warrant some hyperbole.
Well, the photos in the reader also are very illustrative, and thank you for keeping them from being
too descriptive,
scatological.
it was a challenge.
Yeah, the piece is colorful, I will say, and uses some language that we can't broadcast over these airwaves.
Direct quotes.
Yeah. Anyway, it is a. I'm glad that it's getting some attention from the local media, and also from apparently state and federal officials. The bottom line is, in the event of a catastrophic failure, it would either mean, I mean, plant shuts down and basically people can't flush their toilets, right? Like, it would. It just would go nowhere.
It would be a townwide health hazard.
Right. Otherwise, it would be plant shuts down and is just open to the Pend'Oreille River, right. And we'd just be evacuating raw sewage into the
It would
river.
Be a disaster.
Either way, yeah.
It would be repeatedly, I heard, this would be national level, like, this would be bad.
Yeah.
Very, very bad.
Yeah. Well, okay. Briefly, we can... the one thing I meant to ask you about, and I'm sorry I didn't preview this for you off the air, Zach, so putting you in the hot seat. A few weeks ago, maybe a month ago, you had a piece in the Reader about the East and West Bonner County Library Districts considering redrawing their district boundaries. Is there any update on that district boundary question at all? Is that process moving forward?
I think that's just sort of simmering.
Yeah.
I actually just emailed this morning before I came into the studio with Vanessa Velez, our new library director.
Yeah.
To clarify a couple of things. I may have got some things wrong in that article, so I look forward to a correction potentially.
Okay.
but no, there is no big movement on that at all. I don't know when it would be. I mean, even if they did make this change,
mm-hmm.
it probably wouldn't affect anything until the next fiscal year.
Okay.
So it's not an immediate issue for East Bonner County. I think West Bonner County definitely feels like it needs to be addressed now.
Right.
But East Bonner and West Bonner are going to have to come together on it. And so it just depends on the timeline for both parties.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people on the East Bonner County Library Board who do not think that this should happen at all. Mm. So I mean, there is conflict. I mean, not necessarily like harsh conflict, but there is disagreement.
Yes.
I guess.
Well, what's coming up? What else is coming up in the what can we look forward to in next week's Reader? Can you give us any kind of a little preview of that?
Right. So we have a city council meeting coming up next week, and mm-hmm. one of the things that the mayor is going to bring forward, he told me he's going to bring forward. He may not. Who knows? But
mm-hmm.
but as of Tuesday, when I talked to him, he said he was going to talk about the local option tax pitch.
Okay.
So he's going to propose a local option sales tax of 1%,
this is KRS,
which would be the same sort of local option tax as Pend'Oreille is considering. So 1% on sales of goods, and that money would go toward a dedicated fund to repair or rehab our city streets, which has become a major issue.
Yeah.
So our street infrastructure is really bad in a lot of areas of town. And it's an issue kind of like the wastewater treatment plant that we've talked about and kind of kicked around for years and years and never really done anything serious about. We did a 7% lodging tax last year, and a portion of that was dedicated toward roads, about $1 million a year. But as I was told, $1 million doesn't get you very far with road work. If you do sort of a full rebuild on a street, so curb, gutter, like sewer laterals, sidewalk, everything. $1 million is a block and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
wow.
We don't do that to every single block and a half of street. Yeah. Like, we don't do a full rebuild, but, you know, that's sort of the high level is a block and a half. A lane mile, which is a mile of lane.
Yeah.
One whole lane of mm-hmm. a mile. So it could be a half a mile, but two lanes.
Yeah.
So, kind of give you an idea what a lane mile is. Mm-hmm. It's about $3 million.
Okay.
So what we've been allocating toward roads is never going to get us where we need to be. And I'm just pulling this off the top of my head. But what I heard was if we did sort of the bare minimum mm-hmm. to fix all of our streets to a national average, would be about $36 million. If we did a rehab of all of our streets, which is, mm-hmm. you know, sort of one step up from that. So, mm-hmm. you know, sidewalks and, you know, nicer amenities, that would be more like $76 million. And if we went mm-hmm. full Monty, like the best, like highest quality, like super modern streets, it'd be like $200 something million.
Okay.
So we're going to try to land somewhere maybe in the middle of that. I don't know. But if this local option tax goes through, you'll be paying on your groceries will be the primary driver of the revenue for that. And that is unfortunate in that it's regressive.
Mm-hmm.
But in talking with the mayor on Tuesday, he told me, he's like, well, I mean, it's unfortunate that would be the case. However, we do know from looking and speaking with our local grocers that we have a huge spike in grocery sales from June to August,
mm-hmm.
which means that this would also be, I mean, it would fall on visitors as well.
Right.
It wouldn't entirely be locals, but
yeah.
They're, I mean, and he's going to make this case, I'm sure, on next Wednesday, is that we don't have any other, there's no other options. Like, mm-hmm. we don't know where to get this money, and we're never going to build our way out of the backlog that we have. And we have more than 50% of our streets are, like, failing grade. Like, yeah. they're massively degraded. And that backlog is just, I mean, we're never going to get out of it unless we do something pretty drastic.
Mm-hmm.
And he's thinking that if we do the local option tax at 1% and we put it in now before we hit a 10,000 population officially with the census, and mm-hmm. we won't have this tool available to us after that point. We put that in now, run it out for a period of time, decades perhaps, mm-hmm. 20 years,
mm-hmm.
then we might get the backlog dealt with.
Okay. Cities in Idaho can pass a local option tax, but only small cities.
Resort cities.
Right. Yeah. So, and once you pass a level of 10,000, and we're nine something.
I mean, in reality,
right.
we're probably over that.
Yeah.
But we have to operate on the most recent census.
Yeah.
And the recent census has us at like 9,000 something.
Right. So this will be likely the last chance, or one of the last chances, to pass this kind of tax before the population crosses that threshold. And
I can't speak for the mayor, but I'm pretty sure that's probably part of the case he's going to make.
Yeah. Well, there we go again. It is after 8:30, and I think we can sign off. Thanks very much, Zach, for coming in and educating us a little bit on City of Sandpoint issues, mainly this week on North Idaho News of the Week. Thank you, Will.
Thank you, Jack.
Anybody going to the festival this weekend?
Well, my son is actually working his first job, and that is to pass out readers at the line of people waiting to get into the festival. So he's going to go to every show.
Uh-huh.
Maybe not inside.
Yeah.
But we might go to the finale. I don't know.
Yeah. Kind of considering that ourselves. I was looking into Mraz tickets, and that's the one that was sold out. I can't. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't think we're going to make it tonight. Okay. And then, Will, I'll ask you off the air your review of the Violent Femmes.
Sounds good.
Okay. I should have queued up Blister in the Sun or something, but I didn't. We got Devo coming up next. This is we're going into Otto's Eclectic Mix. Thanks for listening to North Idaho News of the Week here on Panhandle Community Radio.